Welcome to another broadcast of Rocco Fiume Football on the Artist First Radio Network. Send your emails in to dj@artistfirst.com. All past shows can be downloaded free and on demand at the Artist First website. Now let's take an honest look at college football in America today. Here's your hosts, Rocco and Rocco Fiume.
Well, we're ready to take a look at week 7. It's hard to believe that almost half of the college football season is over. So let's get right to it. Dad, welcome again this week, and let's kick it off with you. Give me some of the things you noticed after week 7 in college football.
Well, thanks a lot, Rock. It's a pleasure to work with you again this week. The thing I took a look at over the weekend was the top 25. Now, 4 of them had byes, and 8 teams played each other, so 4 of them had to lose. Ironically, 22 Texas lost, Baylor lost, Arizona State lost, and Michigan lost. That was expected because we knew 4 teams were going by the wayside. However, in addition to that, number 12 Georgia Tech got upset by unranked Virginia, and number 16 Illinois lost to unranked Ohio State. Now, in addition to that, I took a look at the teams with just one loss. There were 21 of them. 4 of them did not play, 6 lost, which left 15 supposedly with only one loss. However, we have to add to that list Illinois, Michigan, and Georgia Tech. So, in conclusion, we have 10 teams in the top 25 with no losses. A few teams, as I mentioned, added to the one-loss list. So we'll have a lot of homework to do to get ready for next week. Yeah. Now, of the top 25, only 6 teams this week play each other. So there will be 3 games of extreme interest. And down the road, later on in the show, I'm going to tell you my upset of the week.
Okay. And as you mentioned, you know, with those top teams, you know, you look at LSU, you know, they flex their muscles, and they were on the road. And you know, Tennessee's only 3-3 now, but that's a tough place to play. You know, Alabama went on the road to Mississippi. We had talked before about any place in the SEC is tough to play, and Alabama flexed their muscles. Defensively, they gave up 0.9 yards per rushing attempt. How about that? Oklahoma, number 3, they went on the road. They pounded Kansas. Ryan Broyles became the all-time leader in career receptions with that. And then Oklahoma State went on the road and pounded Texas. And we talked about that, but, you know, we will a little bit more. Now, as far as anything else that caught your eye, anything else as far as performances or anything like that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, Trent Richardson, my man from Alabama, in a 52-7 win over Mississippi, regardless who you're playing, he had 183 yards and 4 touchdowns. Yeah. Now, I'm going to talk about my little college favorite in Division III, Mount Union. They have a wide receiver, Jasper Collins. He matched a Mount Union record with 4 touchdown receptions. Now, sport fans, I want you to remember, little Mount Union has Pierre Garçon in his 4th year playing for the Indianapolis Colts. Now, coach Larry Karius, prior to this season, has 10 champions in Division III. He's the winningest coach in football history. Larry Karius' record is 309-23-3 prior to the start of this season, and he's undefeated.
Wow. And you know what? You forgot to mention, too, that Cecil Shorts, another receiver, is also in the NFL now. So this kid at Mount Union, you know, is part of a good legacy there. He may have a chance of latching on with someone in the NFL. It just seems like Mount Union every once in a while, as do some other Division III programs, put some kids in the NFL. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Well, let me go through some things, and I want you to comment on this. You know, I've mentioned this before in our shows in previous years. I really, really dislike when a university fires a coach during the season. I'm guessing that 85 to 90% of the athletic directors in major programs around the country never played college football, never were on a staff, don't understand what goes into that. I'm alluding to Arizona this week firing Mike Stoops. Now, I'm not saying that Mike Stoops did not deserve to be relieved of his coaching duties, but in my opinion, that should take place at the end of the season. What are you going to gain now? You know, you got to remember, there's 100 kids on that team that came to play for Mike Stoops. You really think you're motivating them by firing their coach? It just seems to me that there's even worse continuity. I've never seen a program rebound from that. You know, unless there's a scandal, but Mike Stoops did everything he was asked to do. He brought them some bowl victories. He brought them some prominence in the Pac-10 conference. Not only Coach Stoops, it's going to happen again before the end of the season, but it just doesn't make sense. And again, if you played college football and were on a squad and understand what goes into the camaraderie week in and week out, in the locker rooms, on the travel, on the practice field, the games are a minor part of that. And yet we get caught up in that, and I just don't agree with that. I just don't see any good coming out of this Arizona firing. I mentioned it last year when other coaches got the axe. What do you think?
Well, you know, ironically, a couple of weeks ago I spoke of the high regard I had for Mrs. Stoops, who alone raised three of the finest guys you ever want to meet, and Mike mm-hmm. Stoops is one of them. Now okay. Listen to this, what happens this year. Mike Stoops beats Northern Arizona. He loses to number 6 Oklahoma State, number 7 Stanford, number 9 Oregon, mm-hmm. loses to Southern Cal, who was 5-1.
Right.
It isn't like he played St. Mary's of the Springs and got
right.
beat. They have this extremely tough schedule, and he lost. And
yeah.
he's a man of character, man of class, always behaves on the field, never loses his temper. All the players love him.
Right.
Coach Ferentz of Iowa said, "I don't like it. College football is getting like the NFL." Mm-hmm. When in the past, five years ago, have you heard of a college coach being fired in the middle of the season?
Right.
I can't recall it ever happening. I agree with you 100%. Arizona
yeah.
should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah, loyalty is a two-way street. You know, if Stoops would have pulled that, let's say he leaves, you know, let's say the program's doing well and he up and leaves for the NFL to go to a staff or to leave for whatever reason, then he turns out to be the bad guy, but it just seems at the drop of a hat we can fire these guys. So there's a guy that did what he was asked for. Now, I want to flip that to a guy that was not doing what he was asked to do. You know, at South Carolina, Stephen Garcia is out at quarterback. He was kicked off the squad. He's been in all kind of trouble since he was there. He was actually thrown off the team in the summer or late spring. He was reinstated by Coach Spurrier. And when he was reinstated, he said, "Stephen, you're back on the team. Here are the following things you have to do." Now, none of us are privy to that information, but he obviously didn't do what he was supposed to do. Here's a kid who, like thousands of kids in the country, have the world on a platter. He's doing what he loves to do. He's playing major college football. He's a starting quarterback at an SEC school, playing for arguably one of the top 10 best coaches in the country. You talk about a guy that's manufactured some great quarterbacks. You're playing for Steve Spurrier, and you screw it up. I don't understand that. And I give Coach Spurrier credit because South Carolina this week has to throw a young redshirt quarterback into the fire. They come away with a 14-12 win over Mississippi State. I would imagine if Garcia was playing, they'd have done much better. So, you know, there again, you have Coach Stoops doing what he was asked to do, Garcia not doing what he was asked to do, and he's out. And I give Steve Spurrier credit. That's the kind of message we need to send in college football, which is, you know, do what you're asked to do, and there we get back to the positives of the game of college football in that, you know, you're going to play for me, you're going to do it my way, we're going to do it the right way, or go somewhere else.
We have to step up to the plate as fans and coaches, and the old adage, three strikes and you're out, throw that out the window. Player comes in to play for you at a major college, and you're a premier coach. You line the players up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
These are our rules. You break one rule, you're gone. Now, you could pick up the USA Today any day of the week and look at the columns on the side. There's always a bar fight. There's always a gambling situation. People have paid for prostitutes and abortions, and these guys still play. One strike, you're out. Good coaches, line your players against the walls, give them a rule, they break the rule, they're gone. Let them go play for Division II or III. Let them go play for a coach that couldn't teach them anything. Let them go play for a school that isn't going to a bowl. And then maybe if we send that message out, the football players who basically are 17, 18, 19 years old will learn the message. They'll learn it the hard way, but they'll learn it the right way.
Yeah, you're right. And you made a statement, we got to step up. But, you know, sometimes we're stepping up or they are stepping up for the wrong reason. And that leads me to one of the next things I want to discuss is, you know, somebody in the NCAA needs to step up. I don't know if we need a national commissioner. You know, we have all these league commissioners. But how about the latest? The Big East is thinking about inviting Boise State and some other schools. Now, what makes college football great? The thing that makes college football great is the conferences, the rivalries. Ohio State and Michigan, 3.5 hours apart. Texas and Oklahoma, 4 hours apart. You know, West Virginia and Pitt, 2 hours apart. You could go on and on and on. Texas and Texas A&M, USC and UCLA across town. Now we're going to get a rivalry out of Boise State joining the Big East. How'd you like to be an alum of West Virginia and saying, okay, folks, get on a plane. We're traveling to Boise for an away game. I mean, what sense does that make? And you brought up a good point earlier. We got to step up, but somebody needs to step up and stop this insanity with these conferences reshuffling. Nothing's making any sense. I mean, we need to have some sort of divisional thing. If they're gonna shoot for this kind of nonsense, why not just take the 120 teams, reshuffle them according to regions, and reform all kind of different conferences? Because that's what sense is coming out of this.
I suggested that a few weeks ago. Just break up the map and say, okay, you're in this division and you're in that division. I've been reading the papers, and according to the information that I've received, Pittsburgh is leaving for the ACC. Syracuse is leaving for the ACC. TCU, which was a ridiculous move, was thinking about the Big East. They're going to the Big 12. East Carolina, Central Florida have lobbied to get in the Big East, and the Big East is thinking about, listen to this, Air Force that's in the Mountain West and Navy, which is an independent, and they are in the discussions for the Big East. They want 12 teams one way or another, but I agree with you. It's absolutely ridiculous for TCU to travel to Cincinnati. You know, the conference isn't that prestigious where they deserve that kind of compromise.
No, I mean, if school wants to change conferences, that's bad enough, but let's have a little bit of regional common sense. You know, we'll discuss later on some other things, but the last people that are thought of are the fans and the alums. You know, that's what ultimately it should be about. It's an entertainment. You know, we talk about doing the best things for the kids. That's another thing. You know, you're talking about a kid that's going to be on an airplane for 8 hours of a round trip on a weekend, and we talk about we do what's best for the kids. That's a bunch of garbage. They do what's best for the money going into the to the NCAA. Take a look sometime at the rundown of the bowl games. Every bowl game has a sponsor in front of it or behind it. It's no longer just the Gator Bowl. The next thing I want to do, I want to talk about, last thing I think here before our first break is, I said I wouldn't do it, but I got to do it. The refereeing again this week is a joke. I don't know if you watched the Michigan State-Michigan game. Michigan State, I understand you got to play hard in this rivalry, but the referees let a lot of cheap stuff go. I mean, there was a guy that threw a punch. Now, how can, you know, if you take the number of referees on the field and you divide that by the number of players on the field, each referee is looking at about four kids. I can't believe one of the guys on the field can't see a guy throw a punch, and then late in the game, Denard Robinson gets intercepted. The entire world is watching as the defensive back points to him and holds the ball out. Now, they made such a big deal that this year we're going to stop the play. We're going to stop the play. We're going to move it back to where the taunting took place, and we're going to march it back 15 yards. I mean, this is the same Big Ten that penalized Ohio State twice last year against Michigan for their kids forming an O with their gloves, which they were told to do by the company that manufactured the gloves, and in fact it did form an O, and the Big Ten flagged Ohio State twice, but yet this week, after making a big point of it, they allow that to go as well as a punch. It was absolutely ridiculous, and again, somebody's got to do something about the refereeing.
Who was the player, I saw so many games, that dove on a pile a second or two after it was over, grabbed the guy with the ball and twisted his head, and,
yeah,
and the fans went insane. The players
the
went insane.
Game, I think. Yeah,
I think that was the same guy that threw the punch. To be honest with you, but there were so many games I don't remember. The refereeing, the obviously clipping when a defensive tackle is chasing a quarterback and someone tackles him from behind. It happens once or twice a week. A referee standing right there, I don't understand how they missed the call. I agree with you 100%.
All right, hey, we're up against our first break. You're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on artistfirst.com. You can listen to our shows as well as the other great archived shows. We're going to take a real short break, and then we will be right back.
Hi, this is Paul Byram, formerly of Celtic Thunder, and I'm asking you, or inviting you, to join me on Artist First at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesday, November 2nd, where I'll be talking about my upcoming tour, which is going to go from coast to coast, right across America, and I'll also be talking about my brand new album, This Is The Moment, which is also going to be available very, very soon. I hope you'll all tune in, and I hope to see you very, very soon at one of my gigs. In the meantime, keep well and take care of yourself.
You're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on the Artist First Radio Network. Send your emails to dj@artistfirst.com. Let's get back to the show. Here's Rocco and Rocco Fiume.
Welcome back. We have an email that we'd like to address. This email question is, do you think moving to super conferences will move the sport to a true national championship playoff? We appreciate the email. And, Dad, you want to hit that one first?
Absolutely. I don't know what super conferences would have to do with that. We have a national playoffs in basketball. We have them in baseball. Why don't we just do what they do? Just get the top teams, have them play, categorize them by divisions, and let it run.
Right.
That would be the simplest start. And then, of course, as we go on down the years, then we make corrections, see what we've done right, see what we've done wrong, make the corrections, and then move on from there. But right. I don't think we have to do too much to have a playoff. Let's just have a playoff. Of course, you know, Rock, as well as I do, the thing that's stopping playoffs is the amount of money these conferences are making from bowl games.
Right.
So
yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think a super conference has anything to do with it. Matter of fact, they might be hindering it. Like I said, you know, if we get to too many super conferences, let's say we get to six, you know, that eliminates some teams because teams will be playing each other more either during the regular season or in the conference championship game. I certainly think it would eliminate, you know, obviously the fact that we have, you know, 10 teams with no losses. But I'm not sure that would help things because you have, you know, let's make something up for, or even this year, you know, look at the fact that, let's say, Nebraska and Wisconsin or LSU, Alabama or Oregon, Stanford. Those teams are all in the same conference and they have played each other already or will play each other already. So, you know, if you look at the way you mentioned earlier, Coach Karras in Division III, look at the way the Division III model is, and run it that way. It's that simple. Again, thanks for the question. What I want to do is get back to our discussion. You mentioned some top performers. I want to give a couple props to some top performers, too, as well. You know, one of our highlight games last week was Baylor and Texas A&M, and I will say you predicted that one. The winner, you had Texas A&M. I picked Baylor. I thought Robert Griffin would step up, and he actually did. Robert Griffin, the great quarterback for Baylor, threw for 430 yards and three TDs. But how about Ryan Tannehill from Texas A&M? He was 25 for 37 for 415 yards and six touchdowns. The other top performers you got to give props to is Oregon. Now, coming into the season, you looked at Oregon and how potent they were, and their great quarterback and their great running back, LaMichael James. Well, LaMichael James was out with an injury. Their quarterback goes down. Everybody's worried about it. They fall behind a little bit early to Oregon State, but no worries. Off the bench comes Kenjon Barner, running back, and Brian Bennett, quarterback, and they proceed to put 41 points on the board. And if you just disguised the jerseys and didn't know who was in the game, you'd have sworn that Brian Bennett and Kenjon Barner were Darren Thomas and LaMichael James. They didn't skip a beat, and you can't say that about a whole lot of top programs that could do what those guys did. There are not a whole lot of top programs. We've seen it. We talked earlier about, you know, look at how who was it that lost the, some quarterbacks? And South Carolina, we talked about that. They lost their quarterback, and look at their struggles. Look at the Michigan game when Denard Robinson wasn't on the field. What happened? Look at last week when Braxton Miller wasn't on the field. What happened? It goes. The list goes on and on and on, but for Oregon to not miss a beat is unbelievable. What we're going to do now is talk about our segment called What We Know and What We Don't Know. College Football Dad, tee it off.
Well, what we know is this, that the party is over. October 22nd, LSU is at Auburn, Alabama is at Tennessee, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Wisconsin, Michigan State. And also what we know is number 10 this week in AP ranking did not play, number 10 of the top 25. These teams in the top 9, they are insane. The scoring of the top 9 teams as compared to their opponents was 438 to 163.
Right.
I can't remember in recent years where the top 10 was so dominant, you know, over their opposition and so
right.
offensively powerful. Now,
yeah.
another surprise of what catching my eye this year is Joe Pa. He's a surprise. Penn State is now 6-1. They go to Northwestern, then they're home to Illinois. I think that team could beat Northwestern. I don't know how good or bad Illinois is, but unfortunately for Joe Pa, he finishes with Nebraska, Ohio State, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
remember, the only team he lost to was Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens down the road with Joe Pa and the Penn State Nittany Lions.
Yep, I agree. You know, I think one of the big thuds we heard this week was Illinois and Michigan crashing down to reality. You know, really, if you take a look at their schedules before now, I thought Illinois would lose, and I thought Michigan would perform a little better, but I thought they'd struggle. But if you look at really, I mean, the teams that Penn State's played, Indiana State, Temple, Eastern Michigan, Indiana, Iowa, and Purdue. Other than Iowa, they haven't beaten a team. You could make up an all-star team of the teams that they beat, and they would finish in the bottom of the Big Ten. So I think they're going to crash down to earth. I think they got some struggles on offense. They haven't been scoring a lot. Defense is getting a little better. It will be interesting playing Illinois, but I think they go 0-3 their last three, especially with Ohio State and Wisconsin on the road. Is there anything else you noticed?
No, nothing spectacular.
One of the things I'd like to look at is I really think we have four elite teams in college football. I think you got LSU, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin. Again, I think it's a shame, even though they're trying to take the human element out of it, there's a lot of human element that goes into the fact that Wisconsin started down below, and that was simply because nobody knew about their quarterback situation. But now that that's straightened out, I think Wisconsin could be, you know, one of the best two teams in the country. They might not get a chance, but I really think we have those top three that are elite, and everybody else will fall into place, but we'll see. I think another thing that, you know, we need to talk about, we've alluded to, like I said, Michigan came back down to earth this week, and Denard Robinson needs a lot of help. And I don't mean just with his teammates, I mean with his mechanics, because he's a one-man show, and that's only with his feet. Denard Robinson has 10 interceptions this year. There's only one quarterback in the Division I that has more interceptions is ratio this year is horrible. And if he's not running the ball, he's ineffective. And if you take a look at the defenses that Michigan has to go up against here down the stretch, I think they were exposed against Michigan State. They play at Iowa, at Illinois, Nebraska, and Ohio State. I think those are their final four teams. I think they'll be lucky to win two of those. I think they'll only win one of those. What do you think about that as far as Robinson?
Here we go again with Denard Robinson. You know, superstar, superstar, superstar until he plays against the team. He was 9 for 24 for 123 yards. He ran for 42 yards. And a couple points. Point number one is why would the coach keep a healthy Denard Robinson out of the game for consecutive plays over and over again? Supposedly the number one everything in the country, and he sits him on the bench. I thought that was a horrible coaching error. Now, point number two. In 2007, running back for Michigan compared Michigan State to our little brother.
Yep.
After the game yesterday, Coach Mark D'Antonio of Michigan State made a beautiful statement. He said, pride comes before the fall. So a little bit too much pride on Michigan after handling Michigan State several years in a row. Now it's come back to haunt them. I think it's the first or second time in the history of that opposition where Michigan has lost four in a row to Michigan State. Could you imagine being a Michigan State four-year senior and saying down the road when you're 50, 60 years old, we beat Michigan four times? How many teams could say that?
Well, I agree with you. And how about if Ohio State beats Michigan, I'd like to be a Michigan senior saying, I went to Michigan and never beat Michigan State or Ohio State. So about your point, though, I'm not sure it was a healthy Denard Robinson he's keeping out. That's just the point. You know, I've watched Denard Robinson closely for the last couple years. That kid takes a beating. And whether you can see it on a specific play or not, that adds up, and when he's played against the tough defenses like Michigan State, like Iowa, like Ohio State, he's limped off the field and not finished the game. I think, you know, Brady Hoke came into Michigan, and the first thing he said was, I want to get back to the old Michigan-style Big Ten football, getting in the I formation, running the football. He better get to that pretty darn quick, or he's not going to have Denard Robinson in the game. And as I said, if you watch Michigan at all, there's a huge drop-off when Gardner is in the game. He's young. He's going to be like Denard Robinson was when he used to go in the game for Chad Henne. He's not that good yet. The other thing that you alluded to, you know, is the comment Mike Hart made. I think maybe Brady Hoke ought to send Mike Hart an email and say, keep your mouth shut anymore, because he made the statement, I want to come back to Michigan my senior year to beat Ohio State. He didn't. And then he made the little brother comment about Michigan State, and Michigan State's promptly beaten them 4 years in a row. So I just think that's one of the things they got to look at. Now, as far as things we don't know, what don't we know yet?
Well, what I don't know is, will Russell Wilson, the quarterback of Wisconsin, impress enough individuals to be considered for the Heisman? Will he be there with four or five other guys sitting, wondering whether he won the Heisman or not? The problem is their schedule. You know, you've got to make big impressions, and I don't think you impress very many people beating Indiana, Purdue, and so forth. So I don't know. I love the guy. You can't argue with his success. But is he impressing enough individuals to be considered for the Heisman?
Possibly.
And go ahead, anything else?
Well, no, I was just going to say on that comment, you know, I think possibly. I mean, he played well against Nebraska. You know, he's got to play Ohio State's defense, Michigan State's defense, Penn State, Illinois. So we'll see. That is a good point. I think one of the reasons it's going to keep Russell Wilson out is just it's crowded. I mean, you can only you can only invite so many guys to New York. And, you know, you look at Luck and Richardson, and the list goes on and on. So, yeah, go ahead with your next point.
Well, my next point is this. And we've been through, what, 7 weeks already?
Right.
Other than the fact that they may play each other, will any major team be upset? I can't see anybody major having been upset yet.
That's a great point.
I'm looking at next week's schedule. There are some possibilities. As a matter of fact, when we get to predictions, I'm going to predict an upset. Nothing is written in stone. As you said, these four or five or six teams that are on top are absolutely amazing. They're strong. Mm-hmm. They're well coached, and they score a lot of points.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. Anything else?
That's it.
All right, well, you can help me with mine. What we don't know, I think, is Clemson good or are they lucky? I mean, you know, and again, you need a little bit of both. I mean, they played Division I AA Wofford and only beat them by 8. And then they play Auburn, who at the time was 21st. They play Florida State at the time, who was 11th. They play Virginia Tech at the time, who was 11th. And then they fell way, way, way behind yesterday to Maryland. They seemed like they were getting pounded. It was, you know, they were down as much, I think, as 28-10 at one point. And then they roar back and win 56-45. They're in the top 30 almost in every category offensively and defensively. You know, they still have to travel to Georgia Tech. They still have to travel to South Carolina, play some other games in there. But, you know, Coach Dabo's got them believing it, and you got to wonder that. I mean, we see that every year. There's a team that's really, really lucky. You know, Taj Boyd's playing well. But you just got to wonder, is Clemson good or are they lucky? The other thing, you know, how are we going to solve this BCS flaw? Do you think we do, or do you just think we leave it alone? I mean, you know, year after year we're going to talk about teams being undefeated and not getting to play, you know, teams that are not in a big conference like a Boise State getting left out. Do you think there's any way to fix this BCS thing, or do we leave it alone?
Well, after this year, you probably won't be able to leave it alone. There's going to be too many teams screaming.
Yeah.
I should be in the championship game. If
yeah,
the season
right.
goes as it currently is going, of course, LSU and Alabama, Oklahoma State, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan State, them teams got to play each other. So it may be a little more clear-cut 3 weeks from now than it is today. But if you were to have to do it today, you would have a problem. And athletic departments, fans, conferences will all have a problem after tonight. Is it going to be tonight about 8:30 where they...
The BCS is
BCS
tonight.
BCS
right.
coming out?
Well,
it's going to be... There's going to be a lot of complaints.
Yeah, I agree with you. The other thing I don't think we know is, you know, as much as we've talked about them and as well as they've played all year, they made a big statement yesterday in that rivalry game. Is Michigan State a legitimate contender yet? And I really don't think we know that. I mean, I think they played Ohio State at the right time and beat them. They definitely were better than Ohio State, no doubt. They definitely were better than Michigan. But now we got back-to-back weeks hosting Wisconsin and traveling to Nebraska. And, you know, they still have a chance to lose one or both of those. They also have to travel to Iowa, and they finish the season traveling to Northwestern, which always gives them trouble, especially at home. So, you know, right now Michigan State's kind of the darling of the Big Ten, at least the Legends division. But I'm not too sure that Michigan or maybe even Nebraska sneaks up and takes that by the time the dust settles. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think Mark D'Antonio and the defensive coordinator Pat Narduzzi are underrated. I didn't realize that at the beginning of the season, but I've watched them play a couple times. Their defense is unbelievable. They have some guys on that place
they do.
That just
they
play to kill. refuse to be blocked, refuse to be outrun as far as passing is concerned. And they proved it yesterday. You know, Michigan is, regardless of who they played, is offensive. And Denard Robinson runs, win, lose, or draw. He runs 100 yards, 150 yards. He didn't do it yesterday. He couldn't get away from that defense. And I think that defense is what's going to sustain them throughout the rest of the year.
Well, we will see. Hey, let's take a real quick break, our last break of the evening. When we come back, we're going to look at the big games in Week 8. You're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on ArtistFirst.com. We will be right back.
Pentek USA Electronic Percussion. American made and known around the world for durability, customer service, and free lifetime technical support. Call Pentek and talk to real people in South Carolina, USA. 800-445-0506. Ask Pentek if they can ship your order same day. Mention Artist First and get a 10% discount on orders placed direct to Pentek USA.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ron Chepsik, and I am a co-producer and co-host of Crime Beat, Issues, Personalities, and Controversies from the Dark Side. We hope you can join my co-producer and co-host, Willie Hareb, and me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Artist First Worldwide Radio Network. We will take you into the back alleys and boardrooms of the world's most fascinating subject, crime. We have a diverse group of guests on the show who will talk about a wide range of fascinating subjects. They include organized crime, drug trafficking, government corruption, sports scandals, victims' rights, and crime as it relates to the war on terror. Our shows are timely and always stimulating. So we hope you can tune in on Thursday at 8 p.m. for another Dynamite program about crime. Past shows are available free. Visit artistfirst.com. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Rocco Fiume Football on the Artist First Radio Network. Send your emails to dj@artistfirst.com. Let's get back to the show. Here's Rocco and Rocco Fiume.
All right, we got a couple of minutes left. What we're going to do is take a look at the big games for next week. And the first one on the ledger is Auburn-LSU. Dad, how do you see that?
Well, Auburn at 5-2 beat Florida this past weekend 17-6. LSU crushed Tennessee 38-7. I thought that'd be a little closer. But, you know, Auburn's loss, their two losses are to Clemson and Arkansas. No embarrassing there. But LSU is just too strong, and Les Miles is too good of a coach to lose to Auburn. I pick LSU.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with you. And then looking at their schedule, Auburn's played three away games this year. They got drilled by Clemson. They struggled to beat South Carolina 16-13, and they got drilled by Arkansas. I think that trend continues. I think LSU absolutely drills them. Next, let's look at USC-Notre Dame. What do you think?
Well, Notre Dame, which is 4-2, has had a week off, but they haven't beat anybody either. Now, Southern Cal, 5-1, just came off a 30-9 win over California. Notre Dame is extremely and greatly improved over last year, but I pick USC in a close one.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, Matt Barkley has thrown for 782 yards and 16 touchdowns. He's a seasoned veteran quarterback. He's been a four-year starter. You know, I think Notre Dame has struggled with offenses like that. I mean, you know, even Michigan, they let Denard Robinson, and I talked about his quarterbacking woes, he let them come back and beat them. I know they played well against Michigan State, but they struggled against Pittsburgh. They even gave up a lot of points to Air Force, even though I think Notre Dame's going to score a lot of points. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game, but I think at the end, I think even with the Notre Dame crowd and everything, I think USC pulls away with a close one. And next, one of the games we talked about that's got to be one of the marquee games in the country is Wisconsin traveling to Michigan State. What do you think about that?
This is my upset of the week. Now, I mentioned this before. If Coach Mark D'Antonio and defensive coordinator Pat Narduzzi aren't looking ahead to their trip to Nebraska, watch out, Badgers. Here come the Spartans. I think Michigan State is going to beat Wisconsin. They're at home. Wisconsin has had it too easy. Michigan State had to fight and fight and struggle all year to have their current record. I think Michigan State's going to beat them in the upset of the week.
All right. Well, I disagree with you. I think Wisconsin's going to keep their winning ways. I just look at, Michigan State, and, for a long time yesterday, Michigan was in that game until that interception. I think they sputtered a little bit against an Ohio State team that's not playing very well. They lost to Notre Dame. I think Michigan State's an excellent team, but I look at Wisconsin's offense and the way they are scoring different ways. Yesterday they threw a pass to their quarterback.
Right.
I mean, I think even though they're at home, it's a night game. I think Wisconsin's too strong. I think it'll be close early, but you never know with turnovers and everything, but I think Wisconsin comes away with a win. Flipping a little bit, what do you think about Stanford at Washington?
Stanford just beat and feasted on Washington State 44-14. They shouldn't have left town. They should have stayed in the state and had Washington for dessert. There's no chance of Washington beating Stanford. I think Stanford wins easy. Washington is not playing up to par this year, and they're not as strong as they usually are. I think Washington goes down as big as Washington State did.
Well, I think it's going to be close. I think, if you look at Washington, their only loss is to Nebraska on the road. They beat a decent Cal team. They have given up some points. I will say they give up some points, and I think Stanford could put it on the board. I think it's going to be a little bit closer early, but after that, I think I'm agreeing with you. Stanford pulls away with Oliver Luck at the controls, and that brings us to our sort of our final segment here. What do you see as far as the Heisman rankings? Where do you rank? Has that changed in your opinion at all in who you have at the top performers and the guys that are going to get invited to New York?
What this is going to end up being, if things keep the way they're going, it's going to be a personality contest. Trent Richardson from Alabama shines again yesterday. I feel sad for Michael James. He's out. You mentioned him being out yesterday. The way things look yesterday and the way the announcers talk, I don't think he's going to play next week.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson from Wisconsin, we've been over that. He still has a lot to prove. Now, if he shines and shines big against Michigan State, you've got to have a strong consideration for him. And listen to this. Yesterday, Andrew Luck, 336 yards, 4 touchdowns. Kellen Moore, 338 yards, 4 touchdowns. So the guys in the front row at the Heisman distribution is going to be a little crowded this year, and there's no clear-cut winner.
But if you had to give it today, who'd you give it to?
Trent Richardson.
You would?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with Andrew Luck. I mean, I agree with you. Richardson's on, and he's getting better and better each week. I mean, he's already got over 900 yards rushing. I think one of the things that is unfortunate is, you know, Robert Griffin again put up big numbers from Baylor. He's got almost 2,000 yards this year. And listen to this interception, TD to interception ratio, 22-2. How about that?
Wow.
And he's completing 78% of his passes. Landry Jones, he has almost 2,200 yards this year. And his TD to interception ratio is 16-6. I think the guy that steps forward and gets it, though, I think, again, people can say what they want, but I think the NFL waiting for him is some of the hype that's going to help him. Andrew Luck has over 1,700 yards, 18 TDs to 3 interceptions. So I think it's going to be close. I think Andrew Luck walks away with it if they had to give it now, but that's what we're going to look at each week. Well, hey, that brings us to the end of our Week 7 show. You've been listening to Rocco Fiume Football on ArtistFirst.com. Please join us next week when we recap the week in college football. This week we get a bonus. There's a Tuesday game. The games are going to start on Tuesday of this week. So everybody enjoy college football. I want to thank my dad for his great insight. We will see you next week.